This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Ashton Mara. It's 7:35. Every story starts with a question, whether it's a simple what happened and why, or maybe a what does it mean. As journalists, our stories set out to answer a question for our audience, or maybe even for ourselves. But the question behind this story is a little more complicated, one that's answer has 150 years of history behind it. That question: does West Virginia's governor have too much power? It's a difficult one to answer for sure, but many who've held positions past and present in the statehouse have an opinion on the balance of power provided by our state constitution, one they are certainly willing to share. The question of gubernatorial power in West Virginia was forced into the spotlight after two decisions by Governor Tomlin following this year's legislative session. Two vetoes, to be more specific. The first of which came just days after the end of the extended budget session. Tomlin cut specific line items in the legislatively approved budget to the tune of $67 million, slashing family and senior services, a move that was not popular with many community action groups. Next, the hotly debated Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act was placed on his desk. Tomlin, after his attorneys studied the bill, decided to veto the legislation as well, calling it unconstitutional. With lawmakers and activists up in arms over both decisions, the governor's powers were questioned. But the question is deeper than, is he able to veto a bill? The obvious answer is yes, according to the state constitution. The question is rather, is the balance in power, one that leans in favor of the office of governor, the proper one for West Virginia? For that answer, why not look to a man who's held the position himself, former Governor Bob Wise.
The governor of the state of West Virginia has, I believe, the power that he or she needs to carry out the duties of the executive.
Wise held the office from 2001 to 2005, but he's not coming from a strictly executive perspective. He served for 18 years in the U.S. House of Representatives and a two-year term as a state senator before that. Still, he says West Virginia has a strong executive form of government, but that's one that works well for a small state with a part-time, non-professional legislature.
You need a governor that can function on a daily basis. You need a governor that can move quickly in times of emergency, such as floods, matters like that. And you need a governor that can really present and prepare the budget, taking into consideration the other elected office holders, but at the same time, you need someplace where the buck stops, and that's the governor.
Some lawmakers, however, disagree. For example, Democratic Senator Eric Wells, who has in the past proposed a constitutional amendment that would create a veto session. Wells believes that would make the process more clear and more accessible for lawmakers. Instead of taking a two-thirds vote of both chambers to come back to the Capitol, they would return at a designated date and take up the failed legislation. But he supports the amendment because he believes the powers within the Constitution itself are unbalanced. On the other side of the rotunda and the other side of the aisle is House Minority Leader Tim Armstead, who says he could support an optional veto session. But his concern with gubernatorial power is not over what's written in the Constitution. The power for the legislature to override a veto is there, he says, and argues that it's just being questioned now because it so rarely happens.
Why are we debating now whether we can or can't override a veto of a governor? I think that's clear in the Constitution. We can do that. I think the reason we're debating and the people are scratching their heads is because there hasn't been a willingness to do that for several, I'm not sure if we've ever done it quite this way, but we can, and it's the role of the government and it's the role of the legislature, and it happens on the federal level all the time. It happens in other states. So why are we so skittish about doing it here? And why do we somehow see it as a repudiation or a slap in the face of the governor? It's not. It's a disagreement or a difference of opinion on what the law should be. And the governor has his ability to veto, and we have our ability to override a veto. And those are just natural parts of the process.
Natural is how Wise describes the process as well. He, too, agrees the power to override a veto is in the state constitution, but disagrees on the need for an amendment to make that more clear. Instead, Wise says lawmakers need to ensure they have the tools and resources they need to do their jobs efficiently and effectively. That, he says, will create a more balanced government. Over the next few days, we'll explore the balance of power further, delving into the state constitution to look for answers to questions that stem from Governor Tomlin's line item vetoes after this year's session and a legislative interest in reintroducing a bill limiting abortions in the state. You're listening to West Virginia Morning on West Virginia Public Radio. It's 7:41. A freeze warning is in effect until 10 this morning for western and central portions of the state. Sunny today with highs in the 40s and 50s, overnight lows in the 20s and 30s. Partly sunny tomorrow with highs in the 50s and 60s.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by National Travel, representing classic vacations to all of the Hawaiian Islands. Offices in West Virginia or online at nationaltravel.com.
April is celebrating Poetry Month across the nation. West Virginia had a great many poets find success, including Irene McKinney, Linda Goodman, and Tom Andrews. But there's a young man from Fairmont who's now also making a name for himself in the field of poetry. Ben Aduccio has more.
Ian Williams is a 21-year-old college student at Fairmont State University. He studies English education, and he dreams of becoming a college professor at some point during his life. But before that, he's finding success as a poet. Williams recently won a National Poetry Award in the National Federation of State Poetry Society's College University Level Poetry Competition. Ian was one of two first-place winners nationwide. He says he first got interested in poetry as a high school student in Fairmont.
In high school, I was that kid who thought he was like super sensitive and was really pretentious about being able to feel. I can feel the pains of the world and I can capture them and write them down. And clearly not high school kid in Fairmont. Don't know anything about the world.
William stopped writing for a while in high school and early on in college, but he picked up poetry again during his second year at Fairmont State. He says he worked with a professor who helped him better shape his work. Now he's a teacher too. He is completing his student teaching at North Marion High School in Marion County. He says writing poetry is like going on an adventure, and he hopes to convince young people that the adventure is worth taking.
I think that poetry has been largely overlooked by a lot of people because it's short and it's compact and there's a lot of meaning into it. And I think a lot of times it's kind of gained this very pretentious reputation. And I'm hoping that in some small way I can help to break down that reputation and to kind of make poetry accessible for a broader selection of people.
Williams's winning selection is a manuscript entitled House of Bones. While tapping his feet gently and using his hands to speak the words, Williams reads one of his poems.
This is one of the poems from my collection, House of Bones, that I got this award for. It's called Work Ethics, and it's kind of talking about the how work has changed over the course of time, especially from a masculine perspective, as we try to justify the work we do now compared to the work we've done before. So as I said, it's called Work Ethics, and I'll read it. A change of pace, the transition from breathing stale air to swallowing the thin chill of winter, whistling through the weeping willows, sifting faded Polaroids, aging orange and indigo faces, fathers and fathers before, wearing the cartilage away in cornfields, coal mines, as their sons try justifying, holding down desks, crunching accounts, mother's arthritic fingers stilled, mending worn denim, thread stretched up, gaze diligent, pulling the weight of family, like the needle past canvas, calloused knuckles, churn the IO in crust as younger joints adjust vectors and pick Pantone swatches. Constructing drywalled offices, three stories above, earth turned by grandfathers, pacing the foundations they poured, we wonder whether we have one of our own.
He says writing a poem can present a great deal of struggle, including being happy with the words you've put on paper.
I think that's one of the biggest struggles with writing, perhaps poetry in particular, I don't know, but that kind of self-criticism and self editing that goes on, and you're never quite ready with something. I think it was, oh gosh, who was it? I can't remember whether it was Walt Whitman. I think it was Walt Whitman, who would constantly edit his work. He'd put out an edition, he'd publish it, and then he'd come back and redo a whole poem and come back and publish it again in a different edition. So it's the constant editing that goes on, and I don't think that's ever going to go away. I'm not sure I even wanted to, but it's, I don't think you can really come across the perfect poem at all. It's just, it's something you just keep doing, can keep doing.
But what does it take to be a good poet?
I think the qualities that you really have to be a good poet are, one, you have to have the determination to do it, and you have to have the determination to study and do your reading and look at it and to study it seriously. And secondly, I think you have to be open-minded enough to take criticism and and allow other people to butcher your work, because you can't get too attached to it, because very frequently I have written something and I've given it to other people to look at and they've just torn it apart. And while that's been kind of devastating when you've put hours into a poem or something like that, it really helps. And you have to build the tough skin and realize that it's part of the process. The poetry isn't a one-shot deal. It's a constant set of writing and revision and then workshopping and then revision and then workshopping and revision over and over and over again.
Williams will be receiving the Florence Kahn Memorial Award for his win in this competition. That includes $500 in cash, and his manuscript will be published as a chapbook, a small publication including 10 of his poems, which will be limited to just 100 copies. He will also be reading from the book in Salt Lake City in June to celebrate the victory.
I've never really done a public presentation, although that's going to come up when the celebration for this chapbook shows up in Salt Lake City. So how I'm going to present that and perform poetry at that reading, I have absolutely no idea. And it's a completely new world for me. This award has opened up so many opportunities. It's unreal.
Williams may have to get used to it. He's already working on new poems and on a new book of poetry about art. He hopes it to be released this year. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Beneduccio in Fairmont.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can listen to and read news stories on our website at wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our news director is Beth Voorhees. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Ashton Mara.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by the West Virginia Humanities Council, publishers of EWV, West Virginia's online encyclopedia, all there is to know about West Virginia, wvencyclopedia.org.